Hi everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. This week we have a special episode. We are going back and revisiting the very first artist interviews that I ever did. So that means that you'll be hearing from Andrea Suze, Ange Miller and Wendy Solganic. So what Richie and I decided to do was to take a listen to those episodes and find our favourite parts, which was actually incredibly hard because there are so many good bits in all of these episodes. But we've chosen a few snippets and we're sharing them in the one episode today. And what we hope that will do is inspire you and also encourage you to go over and listen or re-listen to the episode to hear more. So you can hear the full conversation. And what I'll do to make that easy is to link the details for all three episodes in the show notes. And you'll be able to find them over at laurahornart.com/thepodcast/102. So before we get into it, I want to share our review of the week, and this review comes from Rhonda over at Podbean. Thank you, Laura, for your 100th podcast. You both sound so natural and so easy to listen to. I have joined your online art class, with this week being the first masterclass. Very enjoyable, as is your podcast. This is my first ever art class and my first session of listening to your podcast. Must add, I have thoroughly enjoyed both. Kind regards, Rhonda. Thank you so much, Rhonda, for taking the time to share a review. I hope that you continue to enjoy the course and continue to listen to our podcast. Now, there's just one more thing I wanted to mention before we start, and that is that our featured class this month is Abstract Landscapes. So this is definitely one for acrylic lovers, and I should say nature lovers as well. In the class, we'll be loosening up and creating a series of abstracts inspired by our natural surroundings. So if you want to join in, you can head on over to laurahornart.com/classes. You'll find Abstract Landscapes there. And using the coupon AL20, you can save 20% up until the 20th of August. All right then, let's kick off with the artist interviews. And the very first artist that I spoke with was Andrea Suze. In this conversation, Andrea talks about transitioning from teaching to being a full-time artist and how this involved getting braver about sharing her work and finding different ways to connect and build community.
Hello, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. That worked.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I'm so happy that we've been able to actually make this work.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. You are my first artist guest.
Oh, no way. That's so exciting.
I know. So I've actually never done this before, so it's new for me.
Oh, good. Well, I've never done it either. So there you go.
So we can bumble our way through together. First of all, I just wanted to welcome you to the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and just say how much I enjoy what you do and your art. I can remember the first time that I saw one of your paintings on Instagram and it pretty much just exploded off the feed.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, there was just so much energy and joy and playfulness and bravery. I don't know, there's just something very special about the work that you put out. And I know that there are many people who are probably nodding their heads as they hear this, because you have amassed quite a following as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been very surprising, that part of it, but it's been fun to share because I spent a long time sort of hiding a bit of it. And so it's been fun to just let go of the insecurities of sharing my art and just doing it. It's been great.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that as we get into the podcast, about your journey and, as you mentioned, about sort of hiding, or I know that you've been making art for a very long time, but your sort of rise on Instagram has been fairly sort of recent, I guess, since you moved into more of a full-time artist capacity. But what I wanted to do was sort of go back, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit about how art kind of showed up for you right from the early days.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I was a crafty kid. I was very into trying everything, and sewing and photography and pottery. And my parents were very supportive in all of that. And I had an older sister who also was very artsy and crafty, and she went on to do, to go to an art school. And so when it was time for me to leave high school, my parents said, if you want to do the same path, go for it. But I was a little intimidated by the actually applying and getting into an art school. So I went the university route and did art history with a minor in art education, which was kind of great because I got to do all those studio classes without the intimidation of a real arts program. And so I was doing that in university. And while doing that, I lucked out in a job teaching art at an art store, like a local art store here in Victoria. And I did that for years. And the nice thing about that is I was sort of given free rein to try everything. So if I wanted to teach printmaking, I could teach printmaking. If I wanted to try a class in mosaics, we could do that. And it was really exploration that was wider than I think what I may have gotten in school. And I did that for many, many years. And I taught, and I just kind of was practicing behind the scenes and did a lot of teaching both for kids and adults. And it just blossomed into this kind of like what I feel when I see your stuff, this idea of process and play and not taking things seriously. Because I was teaching toddlers a lot of the time, they're so free and I was inspired by them. But I also was teaching people who were coming to art maybe with not a big budget or not a lot of time. And so it was about accessibility as well. And in all of that grew my own art style. And yeah, like you said, I gave up teaching last year. So it's not even been a year that I've been full-time painting, but that was a big shift. Before I gave it up, though, I had actually opened an art studio in town in Victoria where I taught, but I also had other teachers teaching for me. So we were teaching everything from sort of fine art and materials to crafts and hosting community events and really being involved in the art scene here in Victoria. And I loved it. I loved every moment of it, but it also took a lot of my time away from making art. And so I did that for 3 years and I just gave it up in October, and somebody else is now running the studio, which is fantastic. So I just get to paint in my backyard now.
So it's been less than a year since you actually went into the full-time side of things. What was that decision like for you?
Well, it's interesting. I never, ever thought that I would be able to do this full-time or even make a living from this full-time. It was always I had to teach. And, you know, when you're teaching, you're always creating with the idea of, is this a class? Is this something I can present? Right. And so I had been making art that way for a long time. And then, and doing a little bit on the side for the occasional group shows and a bit here and there of selling, but it really wasn't a big focus. The teaching was a bigger part of my life. I have two boys as well. They're 14 and 10 now. So a lot of those years were also spent raising babies. And when I opened the studio, one of the unexpected parts of the studio was that all of a sudden I was on display a little bit more than I had been. All the other places I taught, I could kind of pack my things in and out. But all of a sudden I was in a studio where I was sharing where I was painting with the public. And so my pieces were available for people to look at, even if I wasn't in the studio at the moment. So I kind of had to quickly lose the vulnerability of people looking at my work and started to share more and more of that side of it, as opposed to just the work that was done for teaching classes. Yeah. And yeah, so that's, I think having the studio kind of got me to the point where I wasn't as shy and could start putting it out in the world as something separate from my teaching. So I'm really grateful for it. I do miss the community of being with students and sharing. So I love your online classes. I have friends who take them, and I think it is such a nice way to connect with people and to really give the gift of you know, what you do is the similar in that you just want everybody to have access to art. It's so important for us. And so there is a little part of me that wonders if maybe I won't come back to teaching in a year or so.
That was going to be my next question, was whether or not you think that you might, you know, journey back to teaching at some point in, you know, maybe some kind of shape or form, perhaps different to what you've done before.
I think so. I mean, I do really enjoy it. I think that I burnt out a bit, but I also, before owning the studio, I used to run retreats, and they were always like local to where I live, but we would have more like a full event. And so it would be a weekend where we would have different teachers and myself, and we would eat together and be together and really spend a full day working together. And I kind of picture doing that more than the weekly classes.
It's a real tricky one though, isn't it? Like balancing that kind of work with having a really active art practice. I know from my own experience, that's the challenging part for me, is fitting it all in.
For sure. And I mean, also you realize after a while, especially if you're repeating similar classes, that your art, the way you're approaching the canvas or the board or the paper, is really different than if you did without that idea that this was for presentation or, you know, for learning purposes. So I definitely can understand that it would be where you are at in that.
And I find the teaching side of things so rewarding.
Right. It is. It really is.
Yeah. It's something that definitely gets me out of bed, to be able to encourage people, and what you mentioned about accessibility is really important to the way that I run my business.
We have a lot of similarities in that way, that it that the part that really ingrained in our own art practice is a concept that everybody should have access to this, and everybody should get the opportunity to, you know, play and have the joy that we feel when we make art. So I really relate to you on that level.
When I first saw your art, that's what I saw in it. I saw that playfulness and that accessibility, and the way that I think people would see your art and go, wow, I really want to get my paints out. I want to try something new. That's what I feel. And that gives people the opportunity to jump in and try something. And maybe they haven't necessarily gone to art school or they haven't done classes. It just opens up the door to everyone to tap into creativity. And that's what I love.
Yeah, me too. I love it too. And I'm glad that shows in the work, because that was definitely, you know, the last 20 years of my life while I was teaching. That definitely was the hope. Have you ever heard of the group Thrive?
I have. Yeah. Because they have a podcast too. Am I right? Is that?
They do. Yes. And
I think someone suggested it to me, and I've listened to the podcast, and in the podcast, there was a group of people chatting and they get together. It's a mastermind. Is that right?
It is. It is a mastermind. Yeah.
So I've sort of heard about it, but I don't know too much about it.
I belong to it. And I was just thinking, like, without the teaching aspect, the Thrive group really gives me that sense of community still. There's it's female artists, and in Victoria where I live, which is very close to where Thrive began, which was in Vancouver, the two women who started that have put together two groups in person here in Victoria. So I run those two, and those women that I get together with once a month are kind of like almost my community now. And so I feel like it really still kept me in the loop of not losing touch with those women who want to come to art. Some of them are established artists, but a lot of them are just coming back to it or finding time in their lives again to practice. And so, right now I'm feeling like that side of that community part is still being fulfilled, but the teaching, I end up going and doing demos a lot. That's been my way of staying in that teaching realm.
Gosh, I'd love to see you do a demo. That would be fantastic.
I'd like to see you. We're going to have to meet halfway. Yeah, we'll have to meet halfway.
That's brilliant. That Thrive group sounds fantastic. And I would actually love something like that in my life, the opportunity to meet up with other artists on a monthly basis and just chat and talk about where you're at and work through stuff.
Well, they do an online one too. So yeah, you could look into it because the online groups are really great as well. And they have women all over the world. It's pretty inspiring.
That sense of community is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll leave it there with Andrea. Don't forget you can check out the full episode of Andrea's podcast if you head on over to the show notes. So now we'll pick up with Ange Miller. Ange is the next artist I spoke with, and she's an Australian artist like me. Ange talks about how much work goes on in the background as you build a creative business and how important it is not to compare yourself to others and get caught up in perfection. She also chats about listening to your heart and creating a business built around your dreams and values.
When you sent me a message the other day and we're talking about doing this podcast, and you mentioned how you're doing all these incredible things now, but it's been a long haul to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to kind of dig into that and unpack that, because I think it's important that people understand just how much work goes on in the background as you build a creative business.
Yeah, it is insane.
It's full on, isn't it?
It's so many hats. You know, I've had to learn how to use a DSLR, how to edit, how to do just enough Photoshop just to get by.
Yeah.
You know, and then all the back end technical stuff, and then trying to, you know, I've got 4 children under 13, so managing that as well. It's nuts.
Yeah, well, I find it nuts. And as you know, I have, you know, my husband's a videographer and photographer, so I get access to those
jealous
skills, which I'm sure that many people are like,
yeah.
Because yeah. I certainly have an advantage there. And, you know, he does the podcast editing and things like that. You know, when I look at someone like yourself who's doing it all, who's making the art, filming videos for your coaching group, managing 2 Instagram accounts, 4 children. Like it's full
okay,
on.
And I feel really tired now that you say it like that.
I mean, how do you do it?
I think it has a lot to do with grace and not aiming for perfection, but just aiming for effect.
I love that.
Good is good enough.
Yes.
You know, good is good enough. I've just got to do enough to keep moving. And the carrot I'm chasing is being able to afford to outsource stuff so that I can multiply myself, you know?
Yeah.
And that I cannot wait for that, because really what I'm doing is creating a way, a very efficient way of being able to paint without any pressure for sales or anything else. That's my dream.
Yeah.
My dream is just to make a way, just to paint. And this way, if I'm teaching techniques and mindset stuff and all kinds of things, then it will be my job to buy all the products and freely test it and actually justify spending my time, you know, like, oh, that is my dream. just to be able to frolic in that, yeah, like a banquet spread before me. And that, yeah. So that's where I'm headed. And it's, yeah, I think it's an efficiency to be able to work everything together so that you are meeting the cry of your heart, you know? And lots of people will say, well, no one can just paint, you know, without any pressure for anything. You have to justify it somehow. And so they kind of limit themselves and block themselves off from that. But if that's the cry of your heart, then there must be a way. There must be a way to figure it so that it's working efficiently for you. You can monetize on it somehow and actually be bringing great value to other people in the process.
I mean, the way I see it, if you are teaching people to follow their heart and find what's within themselves through your online classes and your coaching programs, then you have to live and breathe that, which means
that's
doing
right.
exactly that, like experimenting,
exactly.
exploring and taking the pressure off yourself so that you can encourage others to go to that special you know, place within. So that all makes perfect sense to me. But I also know it's a lot of work to get there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's where you really need to try not to compare yourself to other people. like, I've got to try not to compare myself to you with your your video editing and photography.
Well, it's not mine.
That is, you know, part of your look.
I know. And, you know, I'm very conscious of that as well, because, you know, I do have a partner who is a professional photographer and videographer. So that makes a big difference. And I certainly wouldn't be able to put things out to that standard without that help. So it's really important to understand that. And as you say, not to compare where you're at, and also to realize that what is important, I mean, the editing and everything is the cherry on the top. It does make a difference, but at the end of the day, it's about you and what you're about and your style of teaching and how you connect with your audience, because that is by far the most important thing.
Yeah, well, that's your main asset.
Mm. I think it would be interesting for people listening to hear a little bit more about your background, for people who don't know too much about how you got started painting. So where did this all start for you?
Okay, well, I was always one to lean into creativity. I was a bit of an airhead. That's also it seemed, but now looking back, I can see that's what a visionary child looks like. Somebody who is prioritizing dreams and ideas and connections. That's what it is. So I was always drawing. I've got a family of 7 children, and we didn't have television for most of our growing up. And we just, drew a lot together, actually. We'd have a big butcher's paper roll that my mum would buy, and she'd roll it out on our kitchen table. And we would do all these, you know, Where's Wally? Or in the US, I think they call it Waldo. All these tiny illustrations that would cover the whole sheet, and there would be all these interactions going on between, you know, it might be a war, we might be, you know, illustrating a battle or something like that. And that would keep us occupied for so long. And there was so much creativity going in there, because not only the actual drawing itself, but telling a story and letting it just build. And nobody had a real idea where this was going to end up. And often it would end up being torn up and scribbled on because we had an argument about something. my brothers and my sister, we just always were creative, making things. And I really value that. I value that my mum restricted our screen time. No, it's especially hard in this day and age. But I think
it is so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's already in us to unfurl. And if we provide distractions so that children are not bored, we actually enable them to not unfurl or to get confused about who they are or where they access their thing, you know, their heart's calling.
I think children these days, they struggle with the same things that we do online, you know, like comparison, not feeling like they're good enough, that everybody's got things that they don't have, constantly looking for sort of that instant gratification.
And just value. Where's my value?
Yeah.
I'm not measuring up like that person, like I perceive that person to be measuring up.
And losing a sense of self in all of that as well, because who are you when you're looking at, you know, all these different things and being pulled in a million different directions?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get confused about, well, what do I actually love doing?
And
when you take that all away, then you actually realize things like, you know what I love doing? I love sitting around the table with my family and drawing and chatting and sharing stories.
Yeah, that's right. Just being in nature, just going on adventures. Yeah, we did a lot of that growing up too, just a lot of time spent in nature, bushwalks and all that kind of thing. I did take art for high school, but struggled with it just because of the pressure. And that's what I felt all the way through. I went to college and did a BA in visual arts and design. And the same thing, just the pressure of the academic style, the academic approach, really restricted my creativity or restricted me from being able to see who I was, and I was often blocked, and it seemed to be something that everyone accepted as a normal part of any artistic endeavor, that creative block was just to be expected, and you just, I don't know, just change up the media or go to a museum and have a look at things, or, you know, and there were all these band-aid kind of solutions. And it wasn't until I went back to the same college to teach that I was really confronted with this as a problem, because if I was to get any job satisfaction and actually teach my students anything, you know, that was effective, I had to get past this construct. The further I looked into it, I analysed it to be a lack of creative confidence. I'm pretty sure that it goes right back to early childhood, I'd say, because everyone seems to be born confident with their creativity. They're aspiring, they're adventurous, they try and try and try again. You know, all these things are what we need to be able to grow and expand. But somewhere along the line, we get disillusioned and discouraged and judgmental of ourselves, and it seems to seize everything up. Yeah, it was pretty amazing at this college. They love me. So they just let me teach what, you know, whatever I thought was appropriate. So I was able to test. Yeah, try and figure out ways that I could get around this creative confidence deficit in order for people to see what was really available to them. Because if they could just see this tiny little snippet of spark, of hope, then they would understand that it's possible. And then when they understand it's possible, this whole, it's almost like the floor drops out and there's this whole level underneath where they can adventure and explore and build confidence that way, instead of I think it's this idea that something is expected of you, but you don't actually have what it takes yet. And so you've got to fake it till you make it, or I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
It's this measuring up.
I do. And there's so much fear around you know, whether what you'll create will be good enough, whether, you know, it measures up to others, whether it's what you really want. And it just puts up this big barrier. And often we don't have the courage to explore things outside of, I guess, what's kind of predictable. And when you start to get confidence, you push into that space that you were talking about, where suddenly it feels like there's room for you.
Oh, yeah. Endless possibility.
Yeah.
To the point where you just don't, you know, at every turn, another six avenues present themselves,
yeah,
and you have to choose which one to go down.
I know. It becomes a different kind of problem in a way, because you've reached this spaciousness and, yeah, you feel empowered. And then you can go out and seek what you need and make things happen and try something different.
Yeah, and find connections that otherwise you would miss.
Yeah, that's
right.
That
just makes things so exciting and efficient.
Yes.
There's an efficiency about it.
Yes, efficiency. That's an interesting concept to talk about in relation to art.
I know. Who would have thought? But I think because I'd find myself saying this to my students when I'd be demonstrating, instead of having to painstakingly add detail to things, to find ways to get the paint to work for you, if you understand the characteristic of the paint that you're working with and the tools that you've got, find very efficient ways of working with it, so that when you stand back, it's actually representing all that painstaking detail that you could have spent hours doing, but you didn't need to, because if you just like swoosh with the palette knife like this and scratch a couple of times and stand back, it's actually that's all you need, you know, that's efficiency.
So we'll leave Ange's conversation there and move on to our final artist today, which is Wendy Solganik. In this part of our chat, Wendy talks about leaving a very successful stationery business in order to focus on herself and her family. During this time, she reconnected with her art and she made the decision to make her art a healing and therapeutic practice rather than a commercial or business venture. So we'll pick up the conversation with Wendy talking about how she built up her stationery business.
20 years ago, and it was so, so, so popular. And I was really into scrapbooking. And also prior to that, I had kind of dabbled in art school and I had taken a lot of calligraphy classes and bookmaking classes and all this stuff. I had all this variety of experience. And I was a new mom and I had just moved to a new city. I met a woman. She really wanted to start her own business. She didn't even know what business she wanted to start. She just wanted to have her own business. She was very, very entrepreneurial. And I wasn't entrepreneurial. I was really like artsy craftsy. She met me and she convinced me to start a business with her. And we decided that we were going to start selling handmade invitations. And this just goes back to the stuff we were talking about. I kind of knew like how to make my own birth announcements because I had done that for my daughter when she was born, but I didn't know how to run a company. I didn't know how to make anything on a mass scale. I didn't know how to pack things up and ship them off. Like, I didn't even know how shipping systems worked. I didn't know how inventory worked. I didn't even know how to print anything on a mass scale. And she was super confident. She's like, we'll figure it out along the way. And I'm just, it's my personality that once I commit to something, I kind of like go in whole hog. So you've got the combination of this person who's kind of like fearless and super entrepreneurial, and I'm super artsy craftsy, and I get really excited about things. And the combination of it, you know, made us kind of like unstoppable. And we basically entered a market in the United States that at the time was a very well-established thing, like the wedding invitation industry. Birth announcements were super popular at the time. Holiday cards, very, very popular. And the way that they were sold at the time, this was pre-internet, the way that they were sold is in these big, heavy catalogs where people would go to a fine stationery store or they would go to someone's home and they would look through these big catalogs. And basically what we did is we just started marketing ourselves and this cute product that we were making. We started marketing it locally. I kind of had this sense that doing this locally was like a no-win game. There was no way we were going to ever turn this into anything really big, and that we needed to do this, you know, nationally or even internationally and create these big catalogs and get them into stores. And basically that's what we did. We figured out how to do it. We rented a space, we purchased inventory, we purchased equipment, and just over time it just grew and grew and grew into this multi-million dollar business at the height, like basically before the economic bubble burst with the whole housing crisis. We had like either, I can't remember exactly, like something like 25 or 30 employees.
Wow.
Yeah. So talk about like letting go
The thing that's coming to my mind, which is so interesting, is I'm like, wow, that's so brave. That's so brave. And you talk about how when I'm painting, I'm so brave. But, you know, when I hear so your story, I'm like, wow.
First of all, my business partner she was amazing and fearless. And I was really motivated, frankly, just kind of like by money. I mean, I was young, I was married, I had one child and had to figure out a way, you know, to support ourselves. And my husband was also starting his own business at the same time. So we didn't have, you know, income from his business yet. And it was kind of like, I got to do this. So I have to get over the fact that I'm afraid to do everything and I just have to do it, even though I'm sensing all of this fear within myself. And again, you've got your husband and you guys can like, whatever your strengths are, can compensate for his weaknesses and vice versa. And that's really how it was with my business partner and I. She had some weaknesses that I compensated for and I had weaknesses that she compensated for. And together we really built this big thing. And then, you know, over time, things started to change. The way that stationery was sold started to change. It started to be more and more online. Our lives started to change. I had two more children while I was running this business and it was growing. And that was really, really, really hard on me. Like the balance of, you know, work and home life. My interests started to change. Like after doing it for so long, like what was once fun and exciting wasn't nearly as fun and exciting. Just things started to change. And eventually I said, you know what, I really need to focus on myself and my family. And even though it's a huge risk to leave, I'm going to leave. And I left it all behind. And I chose really, you know, to take that was like a huge risk, a huge financial risk to leave it behind. But I had to choose my kids and my sanity. And it's just something that, you know, I'm really sensitive to when I hear other people's business stories, especially moms with young kids, the challenges and the demands of raising a family and being there for people while at the same time you're trying to grow this business that's going to support you and your family. Like it's a really challenging thing to do. It's a really brave thing to do, but I know that sometimes it's the only thing you can do. You feel like really called to do it. I know that for me, working for someone else in a big corporation, that was going to be like really soul sucking for me. Like I'd already kind of tried working sort of, I worked in a law firm back when I was single, and I just kind of knew that I wasn't really a corporate type, that I was like way more creative and that I could never really fit in a box like that. I couldn't play the games, like the office kind of politics and the schmoozing. And I just, I knew it wasn't for me. I was way too artsy. Like I always just wanted to be crafting. I was a potter for a really long time before I even started painting and drawing. I made ceramics. I thought there was a time I thought where I would be a ceramic artist for the rest of my life. Like I couldn't even imagine that I would ever want to do anything else. That's how much I was in love with making pottery. But when push came to shove, I looked at the people that I knew that were making their career out of making pottery, and they were really living like at a subsistence level.
Yeah. Yeah. We see a lot of that.
You do. So, yeah. I mean, I see a lot of like incredible potters on Instagram. Just the proliferation of incredible pottery is also
I love it too.
Astonishing. I was hearing you talking about your mugs.
Yeah. I love ceramics and pottery and all that.
I knew all these people that were doing the craft market circuit, you know, where they would make pottery and then they would, they would get a booth at a big market. Like even I was living in Beverly Hills, like I was living in a really nice place, and I knew people who were selling at these markets, and they were like living literally like at the poverty line, and they were producing, you know, their craft all year round, selling at many shows a year. I didn't want to do that either. That's also kind of where my resistance comes from, as far as putting myself out there and like, you know, trying really hard to sell my own art. I kind of have a little bit of resistance around it, because I'm like, yeah, I know how hard people work and I know what the return is. And I think that on some level, I feel like that would suck out of me what I really love about making art, which is really just the therapeutic aspect of it.
Yeah, I can see now, knowing your background, and yeah, definitely can relate to that concern around how hard it is to make a living from selling art on its own. That is the reality of it. It is really difficult to make a good income just from selling art. Most people that are doing really well have a number of different sort of arms to their business. Many are incorporating teaching, but if not, they're moving into things like lifestyle products or events and things like that. So it's the straight up just selling the painting that you made is a difficult path.
It's just a huge hustle. If you want to make a living as an artist, it's just not an easy way to make a living. And the unfortunate thing is that people, I think, they go into art because of their love of making art, but then the income producing part of it becomes sort of such a slog. That's the thing that I'm really like protective over of myself, because I really did pay my dues for such a long time. When I grew that business, I had to let go of me actually being the artist, and we had to hire artists, and I just became like an art director and a manager. Like I was doing the financial stuff and the human resources. Like there was a lot of, you know, hiring and firing and interviewing and facilities management. Like I was doing all of these other things, and it was really fun to be around creative people and always be around art materials and all that stuff. But you know, it was a lot of like, oh, the printer, you know, the giant industrial printer we have broke down again, or this equipment isn't right, or the quality control, you know, the ink doesn't match. Like it was just basically handling problems day to day, instead of like, it was never really me, you know, getting to be an artist. That's never what it was. So I'm super protective of, at this point, having had that experience of my own experience in making art, and making sure that my number one thing is, I mean, it sounds kind of selfish, but it is about me and that feeling that I get and that healing that I get from making it, which is really different than running a business. a business.
Yeah. And
really different.
And, you know, that feeling is worth protecting. You know, that makes such a huge difference to your experience of life. And I feel that way too. I have built my business around teaching in a way because it has enabled me to retain freedom in the way that I make art. It's taken the pressure off the art. There's still an element of that because, you know, I want to come up with new ideas for online classes and things like that. But I love teaching. I really enjoy it. Like that gives me a lot of joy. So for me, I think that works. I've stripped back areas that I don't need for that reason. So I think it always comes back to figuring out what it is that you enjoy and what you can do that will make you happy and it doesn't feel like work, that you can balance that with your other, you know, areas of your life and your family and all those sorts of things. It's never really about the money at the end, is it?
It never ultimately is.
You know, it never is.
Like, it may seem like it is for like 5 minutes, but yeah, it never really is.
Well, that seems like a perfect place to end today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed hearing from Andrea Soos, Ange Miller, and Wendy Solganik. And I encourage you to head on over and listen to the full conversations. You can find all of the podcast episodes over at laurahornart.com/podcasts. And don't forget that this month's featured course is Abstract Landscapes. And you can save 20% using the coupon AL20 up until the 20th of August. Well, I think that's everything for this week. I hope that you enjoyed the format of this episode. I'd love to hear from you. Please do send us a message, leave a review, or share a story over on Instagram. And don't forget to tag these artists and let them know that you tuned in.